Welcome to The Solution, a podcast by Growers Mineral. I'm your host, Russell Bobel. In today's episode, Marguerite, Zach, and Jim Hallbeisen all came in to continue their discussion on soil microbes. Now, over to Marguerite.
Today on our episode, we're talking about bacteria and specifically how bacteria interacts in the soil. And bacteria is another soil microbe, but I don't actually know very much about bacteria. Everyone hears the word bacteria, knows a little bit about it, but bacteria in the soil was never something that had really occurred to me. So can you give us just a brief overview of what bacteria is to start, Zach?
Sure. So bacteria are single-celled organisms. In contrast to a virus, which is also a single-celled organism, a bacteria, I can't remember the name, if it's prokaryote or eukaryote, but it self-replicates. So it doesn't replicate sexually, but it doesn't require a host in order to replicate. So it is, in a sense, you could say it's independent of other organisms to reproduce. That's what separates it mainly from a virus, especially in the age we're in right now, where everybody's concerned about microscopic organisms and sicknesses they can cause. In the soil, bacteria, again, are single-celled organisms. They are primarily aerobic, meaning that they need oxygen to survive. They live in an oxygen-rich environment, just like we do. They primarily exist by breaking down carbon structures. They decompose things. That's the largest group of bacteria. But aside from that, they are extremely numerous in the soil at pretty much any depth. You can find different populations of bacteria. They are the most abundant in the top layers, as any soil microbe is, because that's where most of the carbon is. But that's a basic general overview of them.
So are they the most numerous soil microbe in the soil, typically?
Absolutely. Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay.
As I said in my article, in a gram of soil, there's between 100 million and a billion individual bacteria cells. And that number, I'm sure, could go up.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And so you said there are different types. So, I mean, you mean different types separate from just being, you know, in the soil versus being a virus, that sort of thing? There are types just in the soil?
Yeah, so I'm talking about soil types, bacteria soil types in that context. So they're differentiated by their role more than any definite physiological feature, I think. I'm not an expert on that by any means. So, but as I said before, the most abundant type of bacteria are decomposers. Their primary role is to break dead things down. So an animal dies, tree falls down, crop gets harvested and shredded and left on the field. They start to break that down. They gain their energy from carbon. So like us eating a piece of toast, carbohydrate, they get their energy from breaking down different carbon structures. And everything, any living thing on Earth is primarily based on carbon. So any living thing that dies needs to be primarily broken down by these bacteria. They are the most common in the rhizosphere. Anybody that's been to a growers meeting knows that that is the area, very, very small area around the roots, about 2 millimeters in diameter. And the reason that they're most abundant there is because the roots release something called exudate, which is a very, very sugary substance. And it's released to promote these bacteria populations, because they can then bring other nutrients in that the plant requires. And the exudate attracts more of the decomposers. I'll get into that with the next group. But bacteria that actually have a beneficial relationship with the plants.
So for that area right around the plant roots, bacteria will specifically populate there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that other soil microbes are drawn to that specific area too. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so fungi are as well. Mm-hmm. Fungi, which we'll get into more detail in another podcast, they also break down carbon structures. They're a different organism than bacteria entirely, but they are still individually, the cells are microscopic. They form hyphae that we can see. But they focus more, they proliferate more in soils that have difficult to break down carbon structures. So we're talking like woody substances. So fungi is usually a lot more prevalent in forest settings than in an agricultural field. But they will also populate the root, the rhizosphere for the same reason. They still like that exudate, and they still form beneficial relationships with the plants. So the second type of bacteria are called mutualists. They populate the rhizosphere primarily because they live in symbiotic relationship, a mutually beneficial relationship with the crop. So the best example of that are nitrogen-fixing bacteria. So in a legume, for example, soybeans or alfalfa, they will actually invade the root, and then you get these nodes, which are like almost like they look like swollen parts of on the root. Those are nitrogen-fixing bacteria in there. They have the ability to actually take atmospheric nitrogen, which, Jim, you can correct me with the perfect number, but it's somewhere in the range of 70-some-odd% of the air we breathe is nitrogenous gas.
79.
So they can... 79? Okay, thanks, Jim. So 79% is nitrogen. They can actually take that nitrogen out of the air and make it into a plant-usable form. So in essence, the relationship they have with the plants allows the plants to become nitrogen self-sufficient. And in exchange, they get this root exudate. They get protection from predators because they're in the root. That's the best example of a mutually beneficial relationship with the bacteria. There are others that are much less well-researched as of yet, like disease resistance, other pest resistance. The bacteria will send signals to the plant when a foreign population of a microbe invades the area. And in exchange, again, the plant will feed them. So this is the links, the ecosystem I'm talking about. Like, the plants and the bacteria need each other. And so they're going to work together to create an environment where they both can thrive.
So can you give us maybe a more detailed example of how specifically, you know, decomposers also would benefit crops? You know, you said mutualists do, but what about decomposers?
Sure. Yeah, so decomposers drive the nutrient cycle. If we didn't have decomposers, dead things would not decompose nearly as quickly. So when you have somebody harvests just the cob on a corn, shreds the stalk, and leaves it on the ground. There are a lot of nutrients tied up in that stalk that the plant absorbed as it grew. Without the decomposers, those nutrients would largely remain tied up in that stalk. They would never be available again in the soil. So these bacteria will decompose any organic matter they come into contact with and cause those nutrients in that organic matter to be in an inorganic form again, and therefore usable to a plant. So without them, native soil fertility would be nil. There would be nothing there. It would just be silicate and iron and stuff like that. That's the best way they benefit the plant. They provide nutrients that otherwise wouldn't be there. They're essentially like a natural manure. When they absorb a nutrient, when they're going about their business of decomposing, obviously when it's inside their cells, it's not available to the plant, but they have a very short life cycle. So when they die, whatever is in them becomes available to the plant in an inorganic form that the plant can use.
Okay, so as we're talking about these benefits, I said I had heard the word bacteria thrown around before. One place I've heard it thrown around is by you, Jim. So you talk about beneficial and non-beneficial bacteria. And what does that even mean? I mean, I think beneficial seems kind of obvious after Zach just gave us these examples, but what is non-beneficial?
Yeah, well, they've got a job to do, and it's kind of a characterization of what is beneficial to the plant and what is non-beneficial to the plant. And so...
So is it harmful?
They may be. You've got certain infections, certain root rots. Phytophthora, which is a bacterium, will degrade the root to where the plant can't absorb nutrients at all. And see, they're in competition with each other. So what the ones that are helping the plant need to do is overrun the ones that injure the plant. And that's kind of like in your own immune system. If you have the takeoff of cancer cell, you basically want microbes that will digest it and prevent it from succeeding, whereas some microbes in your immune system prefer it because they feed each other. So you have to create an environment that gives you the ones that are creating the result that you're looking for. And see, Mother Nature is letting you decide how do you want to approach that. And see, this goes back to what we talked about in the other podcast, is if you've got healthy food and you start to create an environment where the ones that help your system work better start to dominate over the ones that will make your system go into regression. And see, this is, we want to snap our fingers and throw a drug in there and change that. And you can, but it'll start to go back to the original equilibrium. So if you're eating good food, but you're not, don't have a very beneficial lifestyle, you're going to work against your position and see these relationships. Zach, can you tell me the term that I gave you about how the microbes talk to each other or talk to the plant?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't either. That's something we definitely need to look at and discuss more of so that people can understand that there is an actual relationship between the microbes.
So I was doing some research on that too, because I was confused by, you know, how do these microbes know where to go?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So one thing that in my research that I found was that the plant will actually release a hormone.
It's called an auto-inducer. It can be like a hormone is just a chemical term for a composition type of molecule. And these auto-inducers are basically the same way. And see, this research started or was proven back in the early 1970s that there is actually secreted compounds by the microbes that affect the plant or affect other microbes. And as you get more accumulation of that compound, the other microbe or plant will start to respond in the direction that that microbe prefers. See, so they actually do have a relationship.
So then I was thinking about my garden at home in this. And, you know, my garden at home doesn't get the care that it maybe should. But I was thinking about, I have this giant weed in my garden. I mean, just, you've seen it, Russ. It's huge. Just like 10 feet tall. It's awful. And I was thinking about that weed. And if the plant is sending out a signal of, you know, what microbes to right. be around. If I have a giant weed, it's probably needing different microbes than the actual plants that I want there because it's a weed. So by allowing that weed to be there longer and longer, maybe I continue to have more of an issue with weeds a lot because of what's happening in the soil microbes underneath the ground.
They'll definitely affect that. Plus, the weed will propagate itself. That's its job, you know. And so how's it going to do that? It's going to produce a bunch of seed, get more seed. It's like more offspring, and they start coming to an environment that is conducive to the weed. Their chance of success is much better, see? So if you change that environment to where they're not as competitive, see, that's one thing that growers, customers start to figure out. You're not going to change weed control totally because it's so complex, but if you create an environment that is not good for the weed that's giving you problems, the amount of infection will go down for you, so your control can be better. And see, you're just working towards your position. See, this idea of instant gratification with Mother Nature, it just doesn't work. She doesn't work that way. And see, we're learning that with the COVID crisis. See, we're going to come in and we're going to use a particular compound and cure us right away, or we're going to do something that'll protect us. It's miserable failure. Really, the only thing that will be success is when a vaccine is created. And how is the vaccine created? It's created by growing the proper microbes to release a compound that protects you against this invader.
So, Zach, as we're talking about non-beneficial bacteria, can you give me your opinion on it too?
Yeah, I agree with Jim. And sorry, Jim, on your question before, it's called quorum sending.
Quantum sensing, correct?
Quorum sending, Q-U-O-R-U-M sending.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So I agree with Jim. Like, there are certainly harmful bacteria in the soil. So the two categories that I haven't explained yet, and I'll just go briefly into, are pathogenic, which are microbes that actually have a parasitic relationship with the plant. They will harm the plant and benefit to themselves. And then the chemoautotrophs, which are the only non-aerobic kind, and they can break down, they get their energy from non-carbon materials, so other elements. So the pathogenic ones certainly can form harmful relationships with the plants. But in terms of beneficial and non-beneficial, largely I think what it refers to is more directly beneficial, such as the decomposers and the mutualists, and then the indirectly beneficial, so any bacteria that is breaking down, say, harmful chemicals in the soil, which decomposers can do, and then there's the chemoautotrophs do that as well.
So tell me a little bit more about that, because I'm definitely, sorry to interrupt you, but I'm definitely interested in that too. You know, you had said in your article that some bacteria is capable of metabolizing harmful chemicals like pesticides. So you're kind of talking about that right now. I definitely want you to elaborate on that. I had a lot of questions about that.
Sure. To preface it, I'm by no means an expert on this. I do not have a heavy background in chemistry, and that's really what's needed here, because we're talking about some pretty complex chemistries in these herbicides and pesticides, fungicides, stuff like that. But what I know is that what's toxic to us is not in the same way toxic to some bacteria. They are able to isolate and break down the individual compounds in these chemicals, and that's how they break this stuff down. So the chemoautotrophs will gain their energy from like aluminum, iron, many other elements that the other bacteria won't or can't touch. Those elements are found, I'm not saying necessarily aluminum and iron, but other elements are found in these chemicals. So they will actually go after that and break it down. Because they don't have a complex system like a multicellular organism, like a plant or us, these chemicals aren't designed to work on them the way they do other things necessarily. Don't take that as a broad general statement, but necessarily. So they're able to attack individual elements and compounds in there, break them apart, break them down. That's what these chemicals are relying on to degrade the soil. They're not going to sit in the soil and just degrade over the course of a few months on their own. It requires the bacteria to do that for them.
And see, actually, some of those compounds are very deleterious to the next crop. And if you don't have that breakdown occur, when the farmer comes back the next season to grow a crop, his crop can be injured by those compounds. So he's at the mercy of those particular microbes to degrade that compound for him.
Yeah. And I'd like to plug into what Jim was saying before about the importance of how the populations of microbes affects the population of the plant and vice versa. There's actually studies that say that relationship has a more of an impact on what kind of ecosystem you have than, say, like something like climate. So oxygen availability is the biggest thing. You need to have oxygen in the soil, but then the type of plant that's actually growing there. So Marguerite, your example with the weed in your garden, to a minor level right now, since it's just one weed, it will be interacting with microbes in the soil and trying to promote populations that benefit itself, and the microbes will be doing the same thing. So that's why soil health is so important. If you have a healthy soil, the chances of having a diverse and healthy microbe population are much greater. If you have, for example, I worked for the Ministry of Environment up here in Ontario when I was in school for a month, and we were studying streams, trying to create a baseline for what makes a stream healthy. And we're using macroinvertebrate, benthic invertebrates for that, which are just insects that live in the bottoms of streams. So basically, to say that some insects are very tolerant. They can live in a clean river, or they can live in a polluted one. We always found them to be far more abundant in the polluted river because those insects that couldn't live in the polluted river weren't competing with them there. So I think they're called a bloodworm. They are very tolerant. They can handle a lot of pollution. So we would find them in large quantities in urban rivers. But something like a dragonfly nymph, or it's been a while, a more sensitive species, we could find them pretty abundantly in rivers that mostly flow through forest and undeveloped land, but you could barely find them at all in a polluted place. Well, that's more of an ecosystem rule that applies in the soil as well. If you have a polluted soil, you're only going to be promoting the growth and proliferation of microbes that can handle that, which is primarily microbes that are going to be breaking that kind of stuff down and not directly benefiting the plant. If you have a healthy soil, vice versa is going to happen. Those microbes, which aren't really specialized to anything except breaking down toxic chemicals, in the absence of toxic chemicals, they'll be outcompeted by microbes that actually benefit the plant directly.
Thus, the idea.
That's another plug for the ecosystems. It's an ecosystem. It's diverse.
That's right.
And we need to be promoting that.
That's the grower's program. You're trying to create the ecosystem that benefits the producing plant that you're raising. And you do things in that environment that will create the optimum level for that plant to be productive.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So with back to the decomposers, you said that they were the most abundant, and there's got to be a reason. So tell us more about their functions, their purpose.
Sure. The reason they're most abundant is that the niche that they fill is the largest one. There is always organic matter to decompose, always. I mean, desert sands, you can make the argument there's not as much, but around here, whether it be a forest or a grassland or an agricultural field, there's always organic matter to decompose. So again, they're being driven by the ecosystem that they're in. If you're in an ecosystem that's like a brownfield that's just been polluted over many years without any vegetation growing on it, you're going to find much higher populations of microbes, bacteria that better fit that environment. But in most, when you're just talking about large amounts of organic matter being laid on the soil and in the soil over many years, the necessity is that you have bacteria that can decompose that in high numbers. And they do that. Again, I'm not an expert on how they do that. Fungi do that by injecting enzymes into the organic matter they're breaking down that dissolves it, and they're able to absorb that. Much the same way that, say, a spider injects a beetle with an enzyme that dissolves its insides and it sucks it out like a milkshake. Same kind of thing with any organic matter.
Sure.
Yeah. I can't speak in specificity to that.
So. Good analogy.
Well, who knew talking about bacteria could be so much fun? Who knew? All right. Thanks for joining us and talking about bacteria and bringing your knowledge to this conversation. And we'll see you on the next Soil Microbes episode.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard today, please share with a friend, family member, or anyone else who may be interested. To learn more about the Growers Program, please visit our website, www.growersmineral.com.